Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
Hey, my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer up on Twinview Boulevard and in Shasta Lake. They're right between Oasis and Pine Grove. Just go up and see them if you're looking for a tractor or parts or service or implements. They do it all up there. In fact, they just put up a new big John Deere logo on their sign. You can't miss them. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at
PapeMachinery.com.
That's right.
I got to do the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm letting you take a little bit of time.
You gave me the whole thing. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, so I thought I would let people know that today's October 10th, 2021, when we're airing this the first time. Oftentimes we air Dr. Pry's shows at a later date because his information is really, it's usually timely when we do it, but it's kind of timeless in that you get a lot of history and a lot of backstory. So if, in fact, that takes place, you'll know what we're talking about. And there is always a commercial-free recording posted after the show, like later in the afternoon. And you can access that at wethepeopleradio.us. I thought I had you on that one.
No, you're totally not paying attention.
But you can get it on the website. It doesn't cost anything to listen to. You can send it to a friend. You can post it online. You can do whatever you want. And for some reason, they don't seem to block us when we put things on Facebook and whatnot. So feel free to put the shows up there and let people get informed, because it seems that the media has no interest in informing anyone of anything, really, these days.
No.
We just go in a circle all the time. And have to listen to things about Hunter Biden's artwork. Maybe we'll get some of that later on today and how that factors into China, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, and then I did hear that Brian Seltzer now has a new hair care line, so you might want to check that out as well.
Nice. See the little troll, the little bald troll over there on CNN?
Yeah, there you go.
Nice, Bill. Way to throw that in there. So Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is a smart guy. He's done a lot of interesting things, worked for the CIA. He's been the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission and the House Armed Services Committee. He was in, just done a little bit of everything and worked a lot with Russia and the things with the Cold War and nuclear strategy. Also, big player on the EMP issue, the electromagnetic pulse issue. We've done bunches of shows with that, and I should tell you that also on the page today we have a list of his books that are terrific. The Power and the Light is the newest, the most recent, how about that, the most recent one, the Congressional EMPs Commission's War to Save America, and Blackout Wars, EMP Manhattan Project, War Scare, Poseidon, Russia's New Doomsday Machine. So, fun topics. It's probably why they change the topic of his articles all the time when they put them on Newsmax and different places. They always try to give him a kind of a less catchy topic. But I've posted a couple articles for you today that he has: the Taiwan nuclear powder keg, the new Cuban Missile Crisis, and I posted another one before that: how to start an accidental nuclear war. That was from September 17th. So those are both on there for you. All right, Dr. Pry, back to you. On the beach in Florida.
To catch your listeners up completely, I have a new book out.
You do?
Just published on the first of September, which is the anniversary of the outbreak of World War II, called Blackout Warfare. And I chose that date for publication, you know, because this describes this revolutionary new way of warfare that I've talked about before on your show, but now I've got a whole book on it. And in fact, it's the first time any such book has been written in the West. I didn't write it alone. It's for the first time we have taken the military doctrine about attacking electric grids and other critical infrastructures using the combination of EMP, both nuclear and non-nuclear, cyber warfare, and special forces sabotage, all of these actors combined, and exploiting severe weather. all of these combined in a new blitzkrieg in cyberspace, as it were, or in the electronic warfare spectrum, as it were, so that you can fight a war without ever having to have air forces or navies or soldiers come into confrontation with each other. You know, it can render the traditional instruments of war obsolete and prevail in less than 24 hours, decide the world war in less than 24 hours, like by, in effect, blacking out your adversary. And, you know, for the first time, what we did is we got experts in each of these subject matter areas, nuclear EMP, non-nuclear EMP weapons, special forces sabotage, cyber warfare, weaponizing the weather in the context of, you know, exploiting it for cyber and physical sabotage, and to collaborate in thinking about how the bad guys would do it. You know, they already described how they would do it in their own military doctrine, but we've never put it all together here in the West and applied it against our own electric grid to see how would this work. And that's basically what the book is about. You know, the first step toward preparing yourself is understanding how the adversary plans to attack you. And this book tries to raise the alarm about that. It tries to explain it in technological detail. So Blackout Warfare, you know, available through Amazon.com.
I'm adding that to the page right now.
Yes, thank you. Maybe I shouldn't have called it that because it sounds so similar to Blackout Wars, which is a different older book. But, you know, I mean, I just think that's the best title because it more accurately describes what they're trying to do. It's a blackout war. They're trying to blackout electric grids. And all of our talk about nuclear weapons and naval forces projected to Taiwan might end up being irrelevant. Because before any of that happens, I think China and Russia and North Korea would cooperate to launch a blackout war against us first. And they would win that way. They might not have to fire a shot over Taiwan. But look, I've droned on for an hour, more than an hour, and you have patiently, as you always do, given me the floor and listened to me.
We were counting on it.
If you want, I'll be glad to drone on for another hour and not let you guys get a word in edgewise. But
no.
perhaps you'd like to get a word in edgewise, make a comment, or have a bit of a conversation.
One of the things that comes to mind is you talk about a blackout warfare. I'm sure our arsenal also has those types of weapons, doesn't it?
Boy, you know, Americans always assume that. You know, that's because you're a logical, intelligent American, and you think Washington surely thinks logically, intelligently the way I do, and I would be reading the adversary's military doctrine preparing for this if I were in Washington and responsible, so that I would have countervailing capabilities. You know, so that's an excellent point to make. No, we don't. And I don't even believe people will say, well, maybe it's in a black program. You know, I've heard that black program thing used as an argument.
Right.
It's like grasping at straws, you know, falling off a cliff, and you don't want to face that reality, so let's grab this root called the black program, that there's some smart guy embedded, you know, in the system that's thought all this through. No, there aren't. I wish I could say there were. You know, the EMP Commission, when we were in existence, you know, up until 2017, I mean, we had access to all the classified programs and all of that. And if we had a black program, if we were preparing to offensively attack these guys the way they're preparing to attack us, surely we would have protected our own vulnerable assets by now. We haven't done the basics. We haven't done anything to protect our electric grid or any of the other critical infrastructures. Now, there's a lot of money to do studies. We're always studying the problem. You know, there billions of dollars are allocated to do research and development to study the problem. You know, we don't need to study the problem. The EMP Commission came up with a plan for protecting the grid back in 2008. How many years ago was that now? A long time ago. You know, And those commission recommendations should have been implemented. But they haven't been. And, you know, our government, unfortunately, you know, it's, I think it would be impossible for us to really have a black program the way we used to in World War II, for example, you know, when we had the Manhattan Project. And we did a pretty good job about concealing it, at least from the American people. We didn't end up concealing it from the Soviets. It turned out they knew all about it because the Manhattan Project was penetrated by their spies. You know, but we're such an open society that it's very difficult for us. There are, we can hide. We may be able to hide small things. I hope we can still hide small things. But big things, like being prepared to fight this new way of war, that's the kind of thing you really can't hide, you know. For example, who's going to fight the war? Theoretically, the people that are best able to fight it would be Cyber Command at NSA, you know. Cyber Command doesn't have any more people working for it than North Korea. Where are the exercises? Why don't we hear reports about retaliatory action against China or North Korea or Russia whenever we get attacked with cyber?
Computer wouldn't shut up.
If the administration ever did something like that, you'd think they'd boast about it, you know, as part of deterrence. But no, I don't think we're prepared to do this. And it's more than just cyber warfare. It's combining cyber warfare with super EMP weapons. We don't have any super EMP weapons. If we were serious about blackout warfare, we would have a super EMP weapon or several of them in our inventory, and we don't. We haven't built a new nuclear weapon in 30 years. Non-nuclear EMP weapons. There we have a little bit of hope. You know, the Air Force has built CHAMP. You know, this is a non-nuclear EMP cruise missile, and it's a good example of a non-nuclear EMP weapon. It can follow power lines. In fact, it's deployed in Japan to go after North Korea preemptively. North Korea plans to strike us or strike the Japanese. We'll send out CHAMP to try to black out everything and interfere with their command and control and fry the electronics in their missiles. So we've got that program. That's something. You know, but CHAMP isn't going to be effective against, you know, China. It doesn't have the range, you know, or Russia. China and Russia are both too big. Well, you know.
Well, let me ask you this.
I may retract that because you could use a non-nuclear weapon in the United States. Of course, we don't have the air defense systems that they do, you know. So my bottom line, that's my long-winded answer to your question. No, I don't think they're going to be deterred because they fear the U.S. has retaliatory blackout warfare capability.
Right. So
why should they fear them? We have never retaliated for any of the things they've done to us.
Well, that's true. Well, let me ask you the flip side of that. Do you think China and Russia have hardened their electric grids to counter that type of an attack?
Oh, yes. Yes, they have.
You know, of course they have.
They don't rely on the internet to run everything the way we do. You know, they are willing to sacrifice efficiency for survivability. And so they use earlier generation. Have I lost you?
No, we're here.
Okay, I'm hearing a beeping on my line. Somebody. Okay, the, they, for example, they use older technologies. They're called retro technologies, like electromechanical switches and things like that, that aren't vulnerable to cyber attack or to, and are much less vulnerable to EMP. Vacuum tube type technology.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Russia is still manufacturing vacuum tubes by the millions. It's the world's leading manufacturer of vacuum tube technology. And that's not because they're backwards. They have technologies that are just as sophisticated as ours, but that's because they use vacuum tube technologies in critical infrastructures and in the military, you know, in order to harden them against nuclear EMP effects and against cyber. cyber effects.
Right.
So, yeah, they have, whenever they build a critical infrastructure, the first thing they think about is how to protect it.
Right.
Because they are totalitarian military dictatorships, and security is always at the top of their mind. That seems to be the last thing we think about.
Yeah.
Because we're an optimistic, free, and open society, and the good life, and how can we do things the least expensively, you know, is always our highest priority.
Sure.
The last thing we seem to think about is security.
Well, we don't seem to, I mean, let's face it, you're looking at the multi-trillion dollar sort of Damocles hanging over our heads, and there's nothing in that that's useful or prudent or would solve any of these problems. It's all just a bunch of weirdo feel-good nonsense. That's my legislative assessment.
All right. Well, we'll take a break.
Quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
When the lights go out and you throw yourself about in the dark, that's where you learn to see.
See, that song seems pretty realistic. It's all going to be bad. It's all going to be bad. And then all of a sudden, we all go right on with the show. There you go.
Yep.
All of a sudden, there's
this
big optimistic ending. It's all just going to be magically saved.
Just cover your head when you get under the desk and don't look at the light. And
yeah, if you,
you'll be fine.
If you ever, you know, switch your book and, you know, make it sort of a fantasy. How about that? Let's turn it into a just happy ending. There you go. You can
a musical.
Billy Joel, the power musical. It's true, though. You know, Americans have a hard time envisioning that. I mean, the bad news is the bad news, despite the events of the last year and a half, or 2 years, actually.
Yeah, it's a concept. It's our strategic culture. You know, our strategic culture, I would define it as dysfunctionally optimistic.
Yeah.
You know, our history is so different from that of the nations in Eurasia. You know, we've been protected by the Atlantic and Pacific from the wars of Eurasia, unless we've decided to get involved in them. And then even when we do get involved in them, we've been still protected by the Atlantic and Pacific pretty much, so that our cities are not bombed and we don't suffer millions of deaths, you know, the way they do in Eurasia. You know, we mourn, you know, something like the casualties, the deaths we suffered in World War II, for example, were modest compared to, for example, the Soviet Union, Germany, the other countries that were participants. We actually, the bloodiest war we fought was against ourselves, the American Civil War, 750,000 dead. You know, long time ago. And so this extremely benign, and it's just in the nature, I think, of free systems, free political systems, free enterprise systems.
Well, and,
to be optimistic, to look on the bright side.
But it's so easy for us to forget our history and come up with these cracker box ideas of how it's really going to go down when it's pretty clear how it's going to work if we're not prepared.
Right. You know, if Nazi Germany had had the technologies today and Imperial Japan had the technologies that are available today, they would have won, you know. The totalitarians are getting another shot at it, and they have those technologies. This is a bigger threat, too, the combination of Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, international terrorism. They're all on the same side. They're all working together as strategic partners. This is a bigger, stronger combination than the free world has ever faced in its history, bigger than the one we faced in the Cold War, with weapons that are more formidable, far more formidable, and not just the nuclear weapons. The ones that might be most decisive are the ones described in my book, Blackout Warfare, you know, where we might not, they might be able to win. I mean, the good news is that it's that under these conditions, millions of Americans don't have to die, you know, as they would in a nuclear war. Although you could lose up to 90% of the population through starvation, disease, societal collapse.
Sure.
If we do the wrong thing and we don't protect ourselves. But, you know, I think one of the things the bad guys are counting on is that, so China takes Taiwan under conditions where they've blacked us out. All right. And then what does the president do? Does he go into a losing war to try to save Taiwan, or does he use the limited resources that are still available to us that are going to be mostly in the military to try to turn the lights back on in America? You know, if he follows the Constitution and thinks of what the interests of American people are, he'll try to save their lives. And so, you know, it's possible that, you know, that we'd end up not getting into a nuclear war and not having those massive casualties. But world order would change, you know. You know, we would no longer be in charge. The bad guys would be in charge of the world. And we might end up with an outcome like the one that was described in that unofficial PLA website, where they say, okay, we're not going to destroy you, you know, but you need to start following certain rules under administration as weak as the Biden administration. I wouldn't be surprised in the aftermath of a blackout war if he agreed to the occupation of the United States. At least political commissars who would, you know, make sure that Americans are not armed, and it would become become a tyrannical system like their own. You know, our freedom that they fear most, our free system that they fear most. And if that can be eliminated, it could be okay for the nation to continue to exist, possibly, as long as it was under their thumb.
Yeah, and
of course,
I think
the problem with
The projection that our government is giving the rest of the world right now is not good, and I think that's got to be a factor when they decide their next move. I mean, they look at what's happening over here with our leadership,
yeah,
and this might be a great time to make the move. Who knows?
Right. I mean, who would be afraid of General Miley? You know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Exactly.
Wow. Not only have you got Biden, but you've got General Mark A. Miley in charge of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And the Secretary of State, the whole team that he's got in charge are people that, you know, handpicked to lose World War III. You know,
no,
these people are not General Patton. You know, they are not Eisenhower. They are losers.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be seen. They can't even manage Afghanistan. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah, they managed it.
And these are the guys at the top. I mean, this is supposed to be our best and brightest and our most experienced, and we're not giving a good projection to the world, even as far as protecting our allies. I'm sure they're a little bit concerned.
And as an intelligence officer on the other side, if I were looking at it, to say, well, how far? The fish rots from the head down.
Mm-hmm.
How far down has the rot gone? You
right.
know, we actually have some data on that. You know, I can't remember his name, this lieutenant colonel, right? who decided to
yes.
go to jail. Okay? So you've got to go from General Miley all the way down to Lieutenant Colonel Scheller to find where the rot has not reached, down to the Lieutenant Colonel level. In between, everybody seems to be rotten. That's really scary. You know, so this idea that China's going to attack in Taiwan in 5 or 6 years is, I think, optimistic. You know, it could happen tomorrow. It really could happen tomorrow. They don't need a Navy to do it, you know, the Navy airlift to do it. You know, they've got the means at hand to do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only thing that may be deterring, you know, holding off World War III is that America hasn't hit rock bottom yet. You know, this nuclear posture review is coming up. That's another thing I talk about in the article. You know, it just isn't on the table anywhere for us to be competing, doing what Kennedy did, and competing with Russia and China. Well, he wasn't competing with China then, but competing with our adversaries to not allow them to get strategic nuclear superiority. You know, that's not in the plans. In fact, it's just the opposite. You know, Biden has called for this new nuclear posture review in January. And Democrats, a lot of Democrat leaders, as we've talked about on your show earlier, they want to ban ICBMs. They want to ban U.S. ICBMs. They want to ban U.S. nuclear bombers. They know they want to cut the planned ballistic missile submarine force in half to 6 boats so that all whole nuclear deterrence will depend on 6 boats. You know, even while Russia and China and North Korea are building, you know, this is suicidal. It's completely oblivious to the reality of the world, to the facts that are in front of us on the world in terms of what's happening. Clearly, our adversaries see that there is great military value in nuclear weapons, and that minimum deterrence is not all you need or all you desire, because they're building up these huge numbers of nuclear weapons. And we should have known that from our own history, the Cuban Missile Crisis that we talked about. You know, the virtue, one of the greatest things, one of the things that makes the nuclear weapons the most powerful piece on the chessboard is the fact that it enables you to win without war. You know, Kennedy won the Cuban Missile Crisis without war because he has strategic superiority. Ronald Reagan won the Cold War without war because he had at least parity. He had built up the strategic parity with the Soviet Union. You know, we've got strategic inferiority. And yet we are running around. The Biden administration seems to think that it's still, you know, that we still have a big advantage or something, or that being outgunned in the nuclear firepower indices, all of them, doesn't matter, that it won't make any difference. It's just totally irrational and suicidal.
It does make a difference.
It does make a difference. And this nuclear posture review, I mean, I say it in the article, I've said it in other articles, I'm going to keep saying it, this nuclear posture review should be going in the opposite direction. The choices should not be a best case outcome in the nuclear posture review right now is, well, let's just keep plodding along with the current modernization program that we inherited from Barack Obama and that he never delivered on. You know, it took Trump to deliver on Obama's modernization program. You know, it's not the Trump modernization program, except in that Trump funded it and got it going. But it's a very slow, you know, it's going to take, most of the stuff isn't going to be come online until for another decade. And the capabilities of the systems that we're deploying are not improved. It'll be the same kind of a deterrent that we've always had, since Ronald Reagan anyway, using technologies, updated versions of technologies that are date to the Reagan era and before. That's not the world we're in. We're in a different century, you know, of advanced nuclear weapons, new kinds of nuclear weapon, nuclear delivery system designs, weapons that combine artificial intelligence with special effects like EMP and super EMP. You know, this is what we're up against with the other side. You know, so the current best case plan is inadequate to the challenge of the future. You know, the worst case, so that's the best outcome. we can hope for from the NPR, you know, is an adequate triad, and a triad that is an inadequate. The thing I'm most afraid of is that the radical anti-nuclear activists who have come to power in the Biden administration are going to be listened to, and we won't even have a triad anymore. They'll get rid of the ICBMs, they'll get rid of the bombers, and they'll cut the ballistic missile submarine force in half, and we'll have a great experiment, you know, to see if we can actually reduce to a minimum deterrent posture and not get nuked. You know, that has never been tried before. You know, if we surrender, maybe we won't get nuked, okay? But the whole point is that you don't want to have to be in a position to lose and surrender and let the other guy win without war.
Right.
The way the United States won Cuba, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the way the United States won the Cold War without war. We're being put in a position where that's going to happen to us. And that means changing the world order. I mean, you know, it means that, that the totalitarians will dominate the world. And that's going to have very significant implications for us, including in the homeland, not just for our foreign relations and all the rest. We're going to have to start dancing to their tune. That's what it means to be an inferior power. And, you know, we're afraid about tyranny coming from the inside, and we should be. We should be afraid from about tyranny at home because our Constitution is being violated in so many ways. But it will surely come if we are dominated by totalitarian, tyrannical powers. You know, can you imagine an America that's under the thumb of Putin and Xi and Kim Jong-un and what they will...
Yeah,
the kinds of things they will demand of us?
Yeah, that's not going to work out good for anybody, at least in the West. So let's take one last break. And
then we'll roll to the top of the hour with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People, and you can find this show online all the time, free of charge to listen to, send to a friend at wethepeopleradio.us.
Someone said, why you're a part of Crack-A-Punk's palace, do what the rest don't do. Or face the fact that Crack-A-Punk's palace may have no other choice than to deport you. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you.
Okay, that's not James Taylor.
That's close.
Super not James Taylor. Epic fail. I'm all like, Travis, play James Taylor. You got a friend. We'll do a little diplomatic mission.
That sounded like Randy Newman.
I'm like, what is going on? You get a demerit on that one. We were going for the funny. Little James Taylor, you've got a friend. You know, Bill thought that would be, you know, because harkening back to the Obama administration.
No, John Kerry and James Taylor went over on a diplomatic mission.
Secret mission.
Got everybody on our side.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
and when
what
that,
we have.
And then we had to play a little hardball, and we sent Dennis Rodman over to South Korea, and he got a little rocket man straightened out. So, you know, we've got some secret weapons, Dr. Pry.
Well, you know, I keep thinking about that song. What do we do about that?
Yeah.
What do we do about them? You keep playing that song.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't know what to do about them. Maybe we should go have a big steak at the Black Bear Diner. you know, I hope they serve alcohol at the Black Bear Diner.
We're going to need it.
I'm getting ready to tie one on.
Yeah, don't get a table.
Are.
Don't get a table next to the window because it'll, you know.
He's going to tie one on. No pun intended. Sorry, just couldn't let that
right.
go. it's just so crazy. I mean, it's just crazy. How do they think this is going to turn out?
You know, I'm not sure how the how our side thinks it's going to turn out. God knows what they're thinking. There were rumors at one point that, you know, the administration is so irrational that that they were going to send Kerry to negotiate with China.
Dear God,
getting them to be more serious about the climate change agenda.
Oh, God. Yeah, because that's what they're concerned about.
Yeah, that they would cut a deal with the Chinese over Taiwanese independence and give up Taiwan to get China to play ball on climate change. That's how out of the fantasy world they're living in. Can you imagine? I mean, there would be an instant credibility loss. America's credibility is already in the garbage can. But that would definitely tie it up. It would prove that we are completely unreliable as a lot. Completely unreliable. And nobody could trust us. Practically don't trust us now.
Well, it makes us look delusional. I mean, to look at what's going on in the world today and then say, oh, wow, you know, we've got to really get a handle on this climate change thing. It's kind of like, are you not paying attention?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. They are not paying attention. They aren't. Unbelievable. It's just, you know, the old saying, I've said it before about, you know, God looks after fools, little children, and the United States of America, you know. We need that to be true more than ever. We need that to be true more than ever.
Yeah. So who in there is, do we have any serious players that you've been involved in this a long time? Have we purged out all the serious players from your estimation?
As far as I can tell, you know, I mean, some of the most serious players are co-authors on my new book. For example, one of the deepest thinkers, a guy I admire, and one of the most, has been the most influential, but he's on the outs now, is Admiral Studeman, Bob Studeman. You know, he was, I think, one of the few people who's ever lived who was the director of NSA, director of CIA, and the director of Navy intelligence. And is a very creative thinker, a very deep thinker. You know, he participated in my book, Blackout Warfare, because he agrees with me that this is, you know, a new revolutionary, the greatest revolution military force in history. So I wish he were back in power. Jim Woolsey, another contributor to the book. Dr. William Graham, who... Pardon?
Oh, there you are.
There you go.
Yes. I'll stop walking around. You know, all the best and brightest people tend to be from the great generation. You know, the people that won the Cold War and they're still with us, but they're in retirement or semi-retirement or they're out of power. There are younger people who are really good, but they're also out of power. And, you know, there are a few people at lower levels, you know, that are part of the permanent bureaucracy and places like the Department of Homeland Security Stratcom, the Department of Defense. You know, I'd say the Admiral Charles Richard, he's the current chairman of Stratcom. Smart guy, a realist, you know. He sees what's coming. So he's in power. We've got that at least. Even Frank Kendall, who is Biden's Secretary of the Air Force, is a competent person who understands the threat. You know, just recently talked about the threat that I was talking about the first strike from China, you know, that China, you know, is not what we used to think about no first use and having very few limited, you know, he's seeing the writing on the wall. You know, unfortunately, you know, I can't think of a single person in the White House or on the NSC staff anymore. But there are still, you know, as usual, some good people in the Pentagon. Unfortunately, as we were just talking about before, all of these guys are subordinate to Mark Milley, the Secretary of Defense, and they can be fired or asked to resign by Biden or them, you know, at any time. So they show courage, while they haven't criticized the Afghanistan thing, kind of out of their bailiwick when you're STRATCOM. They are speaking truth to power when it comes to the nuclear threats from Russia and China and North Korea. So that we've got that going for us, at least.
Yeah.
But they need the resources. It's not enough for them to see the writing on the wall. They need the resources, you know. They need new ICBMs. They need blackout warfare capabilities. You know, and they're not getting that. All this money we're printing up, trillions of dollars, and, you know, it's going to climate change type issues. The electric grid is being hardened. Nothing's being hardened against cyber or EMP threats, you know. You know, the troops are being, we're losing. Not enough attention is being paid to this critical race theory brainwashing that's going on in the military. And this COVID vaccination requirement, so that if you're a member of the military, you know, you can only get an exemption on religious grounds. You know, and have to prove it. You have to prove that you're a conscientious dissenter from, you know, to me, this sounds like an attempt to impose political correctness in the military. They want to root out the conservatives in the military and have anybody who will submit to this, okay, and say, yeah, I'm going to let you inject something into my body, violate, and I will salute and obey that order. This is the kind of army you're trying to build, you know, that's designed. It's a totalitarian army, you know. People who have conscientious objections and have the courage to speak up against things that they think are wrong in the military is exactly the kind of soldier we want. We want soldiers of freedom. We want soldiers of conscience. We don't want mindless automatons who will obey any order, no matter how ridiculous. You know, armies like that are used to kill 6 million Jews. You know, armies like that are used to kill 10 million Ukrainians during the Soviet Holodomor. You know, we don't want that kind of army. But the Biden administration apparently wants that kind of army. Why? You know?
Yeah.
Is it because they don't want they want to get the Marines to the point where they're going to be willing to shoot down elderly Trump voters? I mean, if we believe the rhetoric that we're being told, you know, people like myself, and like a lot of the listeners to the show are considered potential domestic violent extremists.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, this is
Well, and then this, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times the folks that are not real players in, like I know when Obama came in, the Tea Party was filled with people for the most part, and there's no all and there is no never, so I get that. But the bulk of the people were not parents of school-age kids. They were grandparents. And the parents were busy. They had, you know, kids in school. They had a lot going on. It's interesting that this brewing revolution has swept in the parents, and especially with this latest thing, you know, that they want the FBI to go, you know, watch parents at school board meetings.
Yeah.
Parents are like, that's it. Bridge too far. And now you're going to give my, you know, try to give my kid a shot against, you know, against my wishes. And it's interesting. They're mobilizing a totally different pushback. And the folks that were already mad from 2009 are still there. So it's like they're pretty much bringing in
well,
everybody.
They're not addressing real threats. I mean, there are real threats happening, foreign and domestic. I mean, crying out loud, look at our border. They aren't addressing that. And there's foreign threats that they're not addressing, but they're taking time to come up with, you know, an environmental league or whatever they are, hire a bunch of people to enforce environmental
law. They
want
the climate
soldiers.
The climate core. That's climate core.
Yeah, now that's important.
We tried to get to the member of Congress here in this district tried to get some of the climate core money moved to forest management, so maybe we didn't have to burn down another, you know, a couple million acres next year. And no, can't let go of any of that money. We need the climate core. So we're going to have, like, I don't know, 18-year-olds out there checking the blanket on your hot water heater or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important. Yes. I mean,
anyway, I've gone crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening right now. And my biggest concern is the rest of the world is watching and they're seeing the crazy stances we're taking on topics that really aren't that pressing when there's all these other things that in any other country, they wouldn't let their borders be overrun. You know, they wouldn't, they would address these threats, the yeah. real threats, and not these imaginary ones.
Yeah, what do you think they think about when they see what's going on our border?
Our allies or our adversaries?
Yeah. Both. I think our adversaries are kind of thinking this is kind of a great deal for them.
It's going to be a great door in right here.
Yeah, I think our adversaries, and this is true both for the United States and for our West European NATO allies, because the West European NATO allies, like Germany, you know, France, they have not been observing border security either, and have been suffering tremendously, increasing in crime and overburdening of social services and the like. And, I think it shows to them that nationalism is dead in these countries and that they are easier prey than they have ever been because they don't even respect their own borders. And
right.
they're not willing to defend their own borders from people who don't even have arms. So
yeah.
why should they defend their borders from a real army when there's a real price to be paid for opposing that army? You
well,
die
well.
By opposing that army. You know, I think that's what our adversaries think, and they think of that of the United States too. That there's this faction in the United States, a faction in charge, that doesn't believe in nationalism anymore. That thinks nationalism is a dirty word, and that the commitment to defend the United States is evidently not there on a daily basis, every day, that the border is open. It shows we don't care about our sovereignty. We don't care about our national existence because we're in the process of destroying it by this suicidal
right.
policy.
And that's huge. I mean, that should not be taken lightly. When you dissolve our borders... I think that's just the beginning
well,
of the
Well, especially
end.
Since we're paying the contractors who were supposed to be building the wall to just do nothing while all the materials sit there. I'm not sure how many people know that. We have got to run away. Dr. Peter Pry has been here with us again, our stalwart educational tool. Finally got James Taylor queued up for some national security stuff here so we can go out thinking about
Yeah. Dr. Pry, thanks for coming on this weekend. Enjoy the rest of your day out there on the beach.
Thank you so much for having me. Always therapeutic. Yes.
well, happy to be here. All right.
Thanks again.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten even your darkest night. You just call up my name and you to know wherever I am, I'll come running, oh yeah, baby, to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got to